You, as you know, he knows everyone, so thank God he's not running for the leadership of the Conservative Party this time again. But he could give a different image to the Conservative, and there will be a welcome addition. That being said, it's definitely a great pleasure for me to introduce you, although it's a cliche to say that you need no real introduction, but I will still make an introduction. My connection to UC Gold goes quite some distance now. Obviously, with the time of Peter White, when Peter was working with the Conservative government in Ottawa, you was very close to the Prime Minister's office at the time. I also connected with UC Gold when you was at the Institute, the IRPP, the Institute for Research on Public Policy. At that time, you welcomed me to work on I think it was a significant project pertaining to the citizenship issue, pertaining to global society and also multinational diversity in very complex setting. So as director of the IRPP from 1999 to 2006, he continued to build bridges. I mean, this is a build bridges, if you're looking for one. This is the model to follow. He has been building bridges between Quebec and Canada, outside of Quebec, in very tough times. I mean, the 1999 moment was a very high mark or low mark for Quebecers in Canadian politics. So he was there to shake hands with Quebecers and make sure that we connected with other Canadians. You was Brian Mulroney's chief of staff and former president and CEO of the IRPP. His role with the PMO was extremely important. He also brought Quebecers on staff, and he continued the Canadian conversation. Very interestingly, you has been appointed senator. Now, not in a very very unusual way, I would say. I mean, he was recommended by the Prime Minister Paul Martin to serve as a Conservative in the Senate. So I think this speaks volume about Paul Martin's quality in terms of being able to reach out to other Canadians and make sure that even Conservatives could serve for Liberal in the Senate. So he's a man of ideas, he's a man of principle, a defender. He always wants to take the high road of politics. You is a bleu, vrai bleu, but a bleu of a special type. Is viewed as a Tory blue. He seeks compromises, not compromission. He defends community life and solidarity. I think those are the key words when I think of UC Gold. That's what he stands for. I mean, the man of compromises, men of community building and solidarity. So as a student of history, at the University of Ottawa, he's a graduate from the University of Ottawa, he was able to make sense of the notion of abeyances, that is, that notion that we inherited from the British, this how do we come to work with one another without always calling upon the Constitution. There are ways by which we can, in fact, call on political ambiguity. And this is what, in fact, changed in 1992. In 1982, when we had this revised constitution, I think the room for negotiation sort of started to shrink for Quebecers in particular. And I think this was one of the problems that Quebecers have been facing in this new era. So let us welcome UC Gold to, it's a man of passion who nourishes respect, and we welcome him to this audience.
Listen to that for so many hours. You don't often get to be at your own eulogy, so it's great. And I know better than to speak too long. I don't want to stand between a group who've worked hard all day and a reception and a drink. So I will engage fully in a moment, but I can't begin sans souligner quelques-uns parmi nous autres who have a special relationship to my understanding of this issue. I see Richard Simeon sitting in the back, and there was a day when he ran the IIGR at Queen's University where this conference would have actually have been sponsored by Queen's. We can get into why that doesn't happen anymore, but I'm delighted the University of Toronto School of Policy Studies has public policy has taken that initiative. Now, I must tell you about Simeon. One of the problems with having a guy like Simeon as a contemporary is that when you're with him at a conference on devolution in Northern Ireland, where Canadians are present under the Canada-UK rubric. I think His Excellency was partially in charge as High Commissioner. And we're giving our British cousins advice on devolution, which they didn't take very well, as is apparent from their present circumstance. And there's a reception, and there's a dance, and there are very people out on the dance floor, and there are doctoral students in the UK who have studied Simeon's work, and they view him as a demigod. And then they say, he dances. Incroyable. Great to see him here. Dr. Tui, of course, taught me everything I ever knew about path dependency. And I have dined out on it forever. And as long as my gray matter holds up, I will continue to do the same. Just for the record, je veux souligner que je reste loyal au castor canadiensis, just so we're clear. I stand with the beaver, for what it's worth. I think the polar bear is pretty but lazy. And it was Keith Banting at the School of Policy Studies at Queen's who said the beaver symbolizes how Canadians do social policy, branch by branch, piece by piece, and most of the important work happens underwater where nobody can see it. So I will separate myself from Senator Eaton. I am a little bit surprised that I was asked to speak at this conference. Simply because now they call me the special envoy for Commonwealth renewal. So I find myself reading all the work of the International Crisis Group, Madam Justice Arbour's tremendous work on Sri Lanka, all the work that's being done on human rights and gay rights across the Commonwealth, where Canada is taking a very determined position. And so I've been disconnected from this issue, but Irv Student, you're determined. Associate Director made the request a long time ago. And if you've ever had Irv Student on your case about anything, it was just cheaper in terms of time to keep the commitment. Much easier. I congratulate the School of Public Policy at the University of Toronto for this initiative, and I congratulate all of you for participating today, and I apologize for not having been able to be here all day. The core duality of our national history and the essential confederal quality of our intergovernmental culture, which is in large part because of Quebec, are easily obscured by the inability of our news media to cover processes and outcomes which are neither in failure or crisis. If the apparently urgent often takes precedence over the truly important for the political class, and when the newsworthiness of the business cycle is defined by transactional, momentary excitements, it is unfair to blame the media for not caring much about the ongoing and positive dimension of the ever-present Quebec phenomena, or its central importance to our future, especially when there is no precise crisis at the moment. Surely we do not diminish the challenge Canada faces from emergent federal, provincial, fiscal, and income security issues, or the benefits and implications of the rebalancing of population and wealth towards the West, or the dynamics of Canada First Nations economic and social exigency, to underline why the Quebec political prospectus remains so important to the rest of Canada, as is the way we think about that prospectus together. It strikes me that just as the world has moved on from 17th century Westphalian nationalism, so too has the debate in and about Quebec moved on from the old simplistic in or out binary spectrum. A few years ago, in a course I was teaching at the Queen's School of Business, Pierre Marc Johnson, a dear friend, and I had the great experience of going door-to-door in Anglophone Montreal as a jeune unioniste for la porte-à-porte under the slogan Égalité ou Indépendance. So I understand what that means in various parts of my province natale. I had Pierre Marc, and he was addressing a business class I was teaching. And one of the students, he was actually coming to talk about the environment, because that's one of his métiers these days. But one of the students couldn't resist asking the fameuse question nationale. And Pierre-Marc responded as follows. If you are asking me whether my life force is now dedicated to the Quebec flag marching into the next Olympics Games between Poland and Rwanda, my answer is, why would I give a damn? But if you are asking about the necessary legislative tools, instrument de société, to preserve and promote one's language, culture, and civilization in an English and Spanish-speaking North America, well, I care very much about that. And I would argue, so should we all. Passion and instrumentality seem two terms from different emotional planes. That is, of course, not so much the case when one's rights to the necessary instruments of social and economic progress are denied or frustrated, something federal-provincial negotiators should keep in mind. There has, from the days of the Quebec Act of 1774, been a core question Quebec's distinctive culture, language, and history always posed about Canada's future. Partially existential, partially about our civic identity, the question is always about the kind of society we wish to build, to sustain, and to advance, and how we shape a common identity from entrenched and flourishing diversity. More cultural and political than structural or technical, this question, and our answer to it, is at the core of how we will shape Canada in the future. When different cultures accommodate each other, they both change. I think that kind of change is good. I think it is enriching and broadening. It is not always easy, and accommodation usually follows serious angst about assimilation or dilution. And even today, there are narrow slices amongst Francophone Quebecers and Orangist Anglos who deeply resent aspects of the accommodation. But they are vastly outnumbered by those who accept or even rejoice at the constructive perpetuity of accommodation, a perpetuity which will always require engagement and creativity. I have had in my office for some years, and this used to really upset people at the IRPP in Montreal, especially les grands patrons libéraux who would visit on occasion, a Maurice Duplessis campaign poster with the slogan, coopération toujours, assimilation jamais, cooperation always, assimilation never. Now, this does not have the ringing words of liberté, égalité, fraternité. It doesn't even have the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for our American friends, or the prosaic colonial office boilerplate, which appeared in all the constitutions of the dominions, peace, order, and good government. But as a touchstone for the intrinsic mix between opportunity and risk in the Quebec-Canada spectrum, it is down to earth. It's a solid bottom line, and I think still works quite well, however you may feel about Maurice Duplessis. Those who forget it or diminish the implicit balance it reflects do so, in my judgment, at their own peril and at the country's peril. Quebec is unique cultural, its unique cultural, artistic, governance, and policy attributes is one of the few non-natural resource core advantages Canada has and has had from the outset. Those among the academic or think tank class, and they know who they are, who like to blame Quebec and its political clout for all the fiscal excesses or social policy overspends in our history, reveal more about themselves than they understand about the Quebec-Canada dynamic over that history. Tommy Douglas and his Courage on Health Insurance for All, Mr. Justice Emmett Hall, who reported on Medicare for Prime Minister Diefenbaker, Bible Bill Eberhard, who campaigned against poverty, these were not pillars of La Société Saint-Jean-Baptiste. And neither was Bill Davis, who brought in guaranteed annual income security for all our senior citizens. Blaming Quebec is the old blame the other guy game, and the lack of a factual basis for that claim never diminishes its bigoted attraction for some. Quebec and Alberta, for example, have a dynamic and leveraging partnership important to Canadian federalism because they share frustrations and imbalances with similar attributes. Neither trusts the majority of Canadians or Ottawa to always treat them fairly, and they are right in that. Quebec has a public policy vision around social cohesion and solidarity, and its programmatic support that is laudable and different and of great value to the rest of Canada. Alberta has fabulous wealth, but has been tied to a resource harvesting base that is not without cyclical, fiscal, and environmental challenge. Both contexts make each justly wary of federal incursion into the Section 92 constitutional prerogatives or instruments through the so-called spending power. And each together were responsible for the 1988 electoral victory for free trade, a victory, by the way, that wouldn't have happened without them, and for which Toronto Culturati and Cognoscenti have yet to forgive either of them. Quebec and Alberta were so eager for free trade in large measure because of their own sense of cultural, resource, creative confidence about the uniqueness of what they are and what they had to offer. Ontario's angst, and David Peterson and I have had this discussion, was because of a discomfort about the depth or uniqueness, perhaps, of what it offers within the North American context. But the hard truth is that by all of Canada continuing to accommodate and embrace the value of difference that Quebec symbolizes, and in the way other regions convey their own unique totality, Canada is stronger and these days deeply admired. Balanced, measured dissent, and programmatic diversity actually work. That Ontario provincial politicians of both affiliations have not offered a humane, new, or innovative social policy idea over the last two decades is actually not Quebec's fault. Quebec is also the canary in the mine shaft on cultural issues, excessive centralization, or obtuse insensitivity. Quebec voters or political parties or CEOs or union leaders or environmentalists may not always be right, and who is? But they are never silent. And thank God for that. And at a time when global pop culture, macroeconomic and fiscal winds, digital and platform obsession seem inescapable, and where obsession with efficiency and productivity tends to produce less of both, count on it, canaries in the mineshaft that ask, what's really going on here, could not be more important. The fact that large aspects of Quebec's political and economic culture are a bit more dirigist and socially democratic surely enriches the broad spectrum of political choices we see and hear about nationwide. What this all means for Canada and our future together is in some ways and areas different from the past, and arguably in other ways still largely the same. Canada will either have the creativity to shape policy frameworks and directions in ways that allow creative and different forms of subsidiarity to flourish and expand, or it will not. The space provinces should have to shape different approaches will be there and financed responsibly, or it will not. The spirit of an inclusive sensibilité confédérale will survive, or it will not. If it erodes or implodes, then Confederation itself will once again be in peril, and that is how I think we might enter the next crisis, should it have to come. The Canadian paradox, firm and affordable national macro policy goals, can only be achieved through flexible and divergent policy variation in the provinces. It's a fundamental of how things work when they work well. And when you try to stop up the creativity or cookie cutter out of Ottawa what social policy should look like in the Gaspé, that's when you run into serious difficulty. By the way, whether the gouvernement du jour is souverainiste, libéral, ou quoi qu'il soit les autres options. We are more of a confederal union, an asymmetric federation historically, in large measure because of Quebec and its take on pensions, education, healthcare and resources over our history, supported, by the way, often by Alberta, of all places, in the mix. As Tom Crashane has pointed out frequently in his work on federalism, The majesty of our federal system is the ability to learn from failures and best practices in different provinces, which need not be uniform or monochromatic in areas of provincial programming under Section 92 jurisdiction. This diversity has never been more vital, and defending Quebec's rights in this mix is still a vital part of a coherent confederal union going forward. While open federalism, the federalisme d'ouverture of Prime Minister Harper, seems to have removed the unduly centralist bullet from the gun, the more intense and focused center-left in our national politics, who may be down but are certainly not out, will be eager to bring back the we know best Ottawa that under Mr. Trudeau saw the souverainist movement flourish so intensely. Who speaks for Canada? Watch those words. That's how the centralists will try to regain the ground that has been lost to creative subsidiarity for the provinces. What's right for Canada is the question they don't want to ask. And that still has to be the question in the confederal context that we have to have the courage to ask. If Quebec is our most European of provinces from the point of view of language mix, demographics, social subsidies, state enterprise, and taxation, does that mean, as proponents from the federalist and souverainist side of the spectrum jointly argued a few years ago in the famous Lucidité Manifesto, which saw souverainists and libéraux and business and academic leaders at the same table arguing for fiscal balance, does that mean that Quebec has European affordability and imbalance issues that are and were severe? Not really. Greece, Italy, Portugal, perhaps even France and the UK would be delighted with Quebec's overall economic and fiscal challenges as opposed to their own. But the truth is that Quebecers are in constant pursuit of different kinds of political formation, often at the expense of the established federalist and souverainist parties. We've seen it before, the Action Démocratique, and we are seeing a similar phenomenon which may have a different sort out for la Coalition pour l'avenir du Québec. It is as if Quebecers are saying, and one of our colleagues said so earlier, to their two main protagonist parties over the period from 1976 to now, that they're tired of that question, the national question, being used to dilute debate on mature choices Quebecers need to make, as do we all, on healthcare, taxation, First Nations, seniors, and broader income security and the rest. That being said, today's Ontario would be in no fiscal position to lecture or offer a better fiscal model to our friends in Quebec. The battles around Meech Lake and Charlottetown, the late 80s and early 90s, seem, along with the heart-stopping 95 referendum, to still be serving as an inoculation against new federal-provincial design innovation or creativity from Quebec or Ottawa, for that matter. Certainly in social policy, where subsidiarity and overlapping jurisdictions should lever innovation, there has been no innovative revitalization of the federal-provincial framework since the unified child tax credit negotiated when Mike Harris and Jean Chrétien were first ministers in this country. There are more ways to revitalize our confederation than just constitutional, and there are more and better ways to build the Canada-Quebec opportunity the narrow withdrawal behind the battlements of Section 91 and 92. What would signal a new cooperative instrumentality that respected existing sovereignties would be the kind of work where options for informed deliberation on both sides could be enhanced. Example, Canada and Quebec disagree on federal so-called tough-on-crime proposals. But they could agree on a joint base case analysis starting the year Ottawa's new laws come into effect so that real trends in incarceration and associated costs, as opposed to feared or dismissed prospects, are available in 2 to 5 years' time for better policymaking. This could be done with other provinces as well. On poverty and income security, Ottawa and Quebec could commit to Dauphin, Manitoba-like MINCOM pilot projects in various Quebec locations that enrich the relative deliberative data sets on poverty eradication going forward, with which each government could make subsequent decisions within its own jurisdiction. These are but two of a range of non-hostile or threatening engagements where subsidiarity, could be encouraged by asking some vital questions about outcomes together. There is a creative agenda for cooperation and engagement that underlines the respect for diversity and cultural duality at the soul of a constructive Quebec-Canada relationship. If, as Parliament has affirmed in November of 2006, Quebecois are a nation within a united Canada, then it's high time we all asked ourselves how the genuine benefits of a post-nation state, new multinational Canada can best be achieved in social, economic, and geopolitical terms. Quebec's capacity to energize this debate and search should be celebrated. It's the kind of positive projet de société task a country with our resources, relative wealth, and even temperament could embrace with some courage and goodwill. Dynamic federalism is the option Quebec's sovereign subsidiarity poses as an opportunity for our Canadian version of confederal government. Federalism is a system, as people in this room know better than myself, that embraces the core reality of a diversity of local needs and opportunities beyond the central exigencies for monetary, macroeconomic, defense, and foreign policy requirements. There would be no Canada. We wouldn't exist without this kind of supple federalism. And our brand of supple federalism is because of the distinct needs, dynamics, and revendications légitimes et traditionnelles of our friends in Quebec. While various issues may be sorted out for short periods from time to time, it is still true that federalism must adapt and adjust to stay relevant and constructive. Asymmetry was the great Pearsonian sort out, while leaders in Quebec, like Lesage and Johnson, from both sides of the Quebec political spectrum in the 1960s, fought for their version of maître chez nous, or égalité ou indépendance. 9+1, as Alain Gagnon remembers, his superb work on the social union sans Quebec for the IRPP, was the sort out under Monsieur Chrétien in the 1990s. Down the road, the challenge will be more about what dynamic subsidiarity, how we shape it, define it, and energize it, and what it really means, and how different approaches on healthcare, post-secondary education, the environment, aspects of settlement and immigration policy, and maybe even the administration of justice can be accommodated within a postmodern multinational confederal union we call Canada. I am a decentralist, always have been, you might have picked that up from my comments, and I believe that pragmatic devolution is always the right way ahead. A federal government that is nimble, sophisticated, and focused on its national priorities, and provinces with the competence to discharge powers that are theirs under the Constitution, with full scope and breadth and the funds to do so, is better than a context of an overtaxing federal government, underfunded provinces, and a federal government that spends under the spending power in areas of provincial jurisdiction while denying the provinces the fiscal base they need to get on with their own constitutional responsibilities. Addressing the Quebec question is more than just la question nationale. It is for our future as Canadians to address the very purpose and substance of governing ourselves competently and responsibly in the modern world. At a time when all governments have come under fire because of the growing gap between the very rich and the very poor, the post-Lehman Bank deleveraging of economies that were built on unsustainable debt, we have a unique chance to shape a more grounded, community-focused approach to federalism with the lesson. Quebec is not primus inter pares in this potential evolution. But I believe that it is the core emblem of diversity, duality, and sensibility that very much informs our navigation and course forward. And for that, we should be eminently grateful. Mille fois merci. Thank you very much.